Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show, he's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
For the captain, Tyler Adams. Austin McKay, Des making a big run. It's meant for him. Des is snuck in behind. Des into the middle. Pulisic scores! Might have paid the price, but the U.S. takes the lead.
I like that the announcer said he might have paid the price because the price was Christian Pulisic's Pulisic, if you get what I'm saying. Huh? Just kidding. It was an abdominal injury. Wait, no, that's not it. Actually, the official injury that Christian Pulisic suffered after scoring that game-winning goal, because that's all it takes in soccer, is just one, a pelvic contusion. He is day-to-day as the United States men's national team will advance past the group stage to the Sweet 16 of the World Cup, where they will play the Dutch on Saturday. A.K.A. Netherlands, formerly known as Holland. There's only two things I hate in this world, intolerant people and the Dutch. At least that's what I'm saying. Until Saturday, it was nice to see the U.S. win. I have a question for you guys out there, because I imagine some of you stuck around to watch the World Cup. Maybe you don't exactly know what the hell's going on and you're getting frustrated with number 9 on Iran flopping left and right. But is this take bad? Is this take too ugly American? I tweeted this out yesterday. I refuse to celebrate the United States men's national team making it to the first round of the NFL playoffs. Note that I said NFL playoffs. I mean, if you read that, you should be able to sense a little bit of sarcasm there, or that I am, like many of you guys out there, pretty stupid when it comes to actually knowing anything about soccer. That's what we have Glenn Davis for here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But shouldn't you want more? There was so much jubilation and ecstasy over the U.S. winning this game against Iran. 1-0. And I found myself afterwards saying, well, I mean, it was really tense. You probably shouldn't be anywhere close to being matched athleticism-wise by Iran in soccer, even if this isn't your first, second, third, or fourth most popular sport in the country. Maybe you should, I don't know, be able to score a second goal, which they did, and it got called back because of an offsides call that I think was a little bit dubious. Yes, Soccer Paul here, questioning the referees. I just feel like some of the people, specifically those who are on the Fox broadcast after the game, we're a little too excited. This should be the expectation. You should be able to get out of the group stage every single year. And I get it. It's hard to qualify for the World Cup, even though the United States being in North America is the equivalent of being in like the AFC East or the, check that, the AFC East of the Tom Brady years. They're, you know, the New England Patriots were the United States of America. Or suppose it's like the AFC South today, where the Titans are the best team. You're the best team in North America, or should be the best team in North America, even though Canada, I guess, beat you, and Mexico always gives you trouble. Look, I just feel like now this is where we get excited about something. I feel like just given the fact that they missed the World Cup last year, no one should be happy or excited.
4 years ago.
Was it 4 years ago, Sean?
Yeah, that's when the World Cup takes place, every 4 years.
Yeah, but what about the pandemic thing? Wasn't it supposed to take place?
In 2018, and it did without a hitch in beautiful Russia.
Oh, my bad. Well, hey.
And then it happened in 2022.
I forgot that it happened in 2018. You know why, Sean? Because the United States didn't make it. By the way, how are you, Sean? Are you jubilant about the United States' victory against Iran and their Big J journalists who keep on asking our players questions about why they haven't asked generals and admirals about the ships that are stationed in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf?
That was your question?
Yes,
I am happy for the U.S. win because, like you said, they did not even make the tournament in 2018, and that they have, I think, either the second or third youngest squad in Qatar. So this is very, very huge to
Sean, it's not huge.
We're not a soccer country.
Who cares?
So making it to you care.
That's true. But hang on. If we're not a soccer country, I mean, that's fine, I guess.
Or we're a young soccer country. But, I'll say that. We have not developed any talent where Brazil has done it for decades.
Do we not, as a country, get consistently talked about how we're moving in the right direction, even after missing a World Cup?
Yes. Because they missed the World Cup. Now they're moving in the right direction. They're in the round of 16 now. They weren't in the round of 32 last time. Now they've made the knockout round.
But go back to 2014. I mean, they advanced out of the group in 2014. They lost to Belgium. They advanced out of the group in 2010. Like, they've done this before. Sorry. I mean, I get it. It only happens every 4 years. But no, let's have higher standards. At least get to at least.
But this is a different team.
Why?
Because it's not Cliff Dempsey and Landon Donovan. They're on their everyone that is on the teams that you watch are now calling the games for Fox.
Right.
Or ESPN.
Yeah, I get that.
So now it's 24-year-olds like Tyler Adams and Christian Pulisic that are doing it. Also, a lot of the optimism, I would say, comes from the fact that, like, Lane Donovan played his whole career in the MLS. And a lot of these guys, Taylor Twellman, played his entire career in the MLS. Clint Dempsey was the one guy that played in the Premier League for Fulham. All these guys are playing at, like, Juventus and Chelsea. All these guys are playing at such higher clubs at 22, 24 years old that's where a lot of the optimism comes from, that these are the five-star talent.
Gotcha.
Or maybe four-star talent.
That makes sense. And look, Pulisic, he scored the goal. That was a great moment for him. And then he got kicked in the nads by the Iran goalie.
His nads went into his abdominal, so therefore it is an abdominal injury.
He definitely got kicked right in the Christian Pulisic's. I have a tough time pronouncing his name. Look.
Pulisic. I don't know why you keep going Pule.
Because there's a U, and I'm assuming that I need to.
How do you say?
Listen,
what's the opposite of push?
This is top-notch soccer talk right here, and I'm just going to go back to what I said before. Sorry, I'm not that impressed that they advanced. If they win here against the Dutch, great. I will be super impressed. But, I mean, they should have been here. They tied Wales. That's disappointing. Tying England, I know, at least based off of expectations against England, that's actually a win for you. But I want to see a little bit more. Beating a team from Asia, which is not very good when it comes to soccer as far as federations go, and it felt tense the whole second half. Pulisic leaves the game, and it was tense from there on out. That said, here is the Spanish call of Pulisic's goal to give the USA 1-0 lead.
Para Huerto McGee, se mete Serginho. Vino para Serginho Des. El toque en medio, Pulisic. Gol! Gol! Estados Unidos. Christian Pulisic lo hizo. Gran jugada, pero enorme jugada. Y después este golpazo del 10 que dejó la vida por el gol. Gana Estados Unidos 1-0.
Why doesn't he keep going and going?
I always wonder what, when they're just holding on to the O, like, what are you thinking about? When you're just going, oh.
Probably.
Like, are you prepping what you're going to say next? Or you're like, do I have another one in me? Do I have another 20-second long O?
That much energy Sean spent to maintain that and not waver with the O as well, I would think there's nothing going through your head.
You're just focused?
You would have to be. And you heard him on the third or fourth goal where it started to sound like, give the man some tea and let the color guy step in so he can catch a breath and think about what he has to say next. Anyway, look, it's nice that they won. It's nice. Let's stop celebrating over it, okay? We have standards here. We have standards. Qualifying the World Cup for the United States compared to all the other countries in North America should not be difficult. U.S., Canada, and Mexico should make it to the World Cup every single year. Every single year! There's no excuse.
This is Canada's... if you're upset at the U.S. for making the round of 16, this was Canada's first World Cup appearance since 1986, and they scored their first goal in the World Cup ever.
See? That's something to be excited about, though. If you're Canada...
What? No, Canada should be better.
They should be better.
They should be making the World Cup every year, not every 30 years.
But they haven't made it, okay?
Yeah, but they shouldn't be excited about that.
Let's pat them on
we're
the
doing
head.
We're doing the Paul Gallant rules. The best soccer moment in your country's history just happened, Canada. Not allowed to be happy about
it. Okay, you know what? Fair enough. I like it. I like it, Sean. It's the Paul Gallant Show, 713-780-3776. A lot of people turn to us for soccer, 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, the Jim Crane haters have to be really pissed off after yesterday's Jose Abreu introductory press conference. I'll explain why next.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
He was our number one target. He made the most sense for our ball club. People can look around, you know, obviously there's Aaron Judge and things like that, a whole bunch of starting pitchers, some shortstops, but what we needed was Jose Abreu. So he was our number one choice, and we got a meeting with him in Miami, so I got on a plane.
That's Astros Hall of Fame first baseman Jeff Bagwell at an interesting press conference yesterday. And the reason I said the Jim Crane haters should be furious about yesterday is that Jim Crane essentially flexed in front of everyone who has been calling him out, myself included, for Jeff Bagwell, for Reggie Jackson being involved in the thought process machine that the Astros now have without a general manager, as they approach this offseason and offseasons going forward and have approached, I guess, just roster construction as a whole over the last couple of years. Jim Crane publicly endorsed Jeff Bagwell yesterday by giving Jeff Bagwell essentially his own little side press conference after the introductory press conference that Crane and Jose Abreu had. And look, we'll see how this pans out. I have lots of doubts and lots of skepticism finding out that Jim Crane's most trusted advisor in that Jeff Passan piece that came out a couple of weeks ago, is Jeff Bagwell. And I think everybody should have some healthy skepticism here. There's nothing wrong with being skeptical. I would love for Jeff Bagwell to prove to everybody that, man, the guy actually knows what he is doing and what he's talking about. But yesterday, Jim Crane was essentially flexing, yeah, Jeff Bagwell's my guy, and I don't care what you guys say. I don't care what you guys think. Gave him his own little side press conference. So what did Jeff Bagwell have to say? First off, he was asked about what his current role with the Astros is. Here was his answer when asked that question.
I do the same thing. I bother Jim nonstop, so I think he's tired of me, but I'm just a voice of how I see baseball. and how I see the other things in baseball that just aren't numbers. Numbers are important, don't get me wrong, but there's other things that matter, and that's part of the reason why Jose is a perfect fit.
So, interesting that that's what we got out of Jeff Bagwell. First off, just talking about the analytical side of things and making sure that, yeah, we need to have a baseball eye, baseball hands on the actual operation itself. It really feels like they're going out of their way to say, we're not just analytics. And you know what? There's a lot of people that that's going to play to. I would say that a couple of years ago that would have played to me. But the thing is, analytics is just another word for information. And I think it gets thrown out essentially as this just gross buzzword. And people have such strong reactions whenever they hear it. Specifically those who follow football first and foremost. But I think there's a lot of other people out there who say, yeah, I don't like that analytics are changing the game that I grew up watching, and the way that it's played, the way that it's approached, the way that rosters are built because of it, at least specifically in baseball. But also interesting hearing in the first little clip there, Bagwell saying, I am just constantly talking to Jim Crane. And I asked this before when we found out about Backwell's, I guess, role, which is Jim Crane's trusted voice. It sounds like Jeff Bagwell could also be the squeaky wheel. He's got a lot of takes. He and Jim Crane are boys, and Jeff is just consistently texting him over and over and over again. Hey, this is what I think. Hey, this is what I think. And if you're Jim Crane, are you going to say, okay, yeah, sure. I would have a hard time doing it myself, I think, if I were in Jim Crane's shoes. But if I'm Jock Jim Crane, who we've talked about before, a guy who pitched back in the day in college, was actually pretty good as a pitcher in college. If I'm Jock Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell's here and I'm thinking to myself, all right, we're going to send Jeff Bagwell down to Miami. Hey, Furkus, you got Bagwell's bags? You better carry them. Yeah, you're going to show up for the meeting, but you're just going to take notes. You're going to watch the big boys play. Yeah, that's right. Then afterwards, you're going to transcribe what went down in the meeting. Well, Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell, yeah, I'm speaking about myself in the third person. Well, we go get beers. Anyway, back to Jeff Bagwell, who had a press conference and for the first time seemed to be acknowledged and I also think shown off by Jim Crane as a part of the Astros brain trust. He said that he will do whatever Jim Crane asks him to do, but he won't be GM.
I want to do whatever Jim needs me to do. You know, I'm not pushing myself to do anything. I know I'm involved. I know I enjoy talking the game of baseball, and I certainly enjoy talking about us and how we can get better.
If Jim asked you to be the GM, you wouldn't want to do that?
I have no idea. That's not really a thought of mine right now. We got enough stuff going on right now. Things are working okay right now, so we'll figure that out when it's time.
Would you interview?
No, I would not interview.
That's not really a denial right there by Bagwell, at least at first, when you hear those clips. Because, hey, that's not on my thought process right now. I don't know. I wonder if Jim Crane were to sit down with Bagwell and if they had a longer conversation, if he would change his mind based off of what you heard right there. Anyway, I think hearing Bagwell there, he will do whatever Jim wants him to do. Hearing that is one thing, but again, I go back to what you heard a little bit earlier. To me, it sounds like Bagwell is offering lots of either insight or takes to Jim Crane, and Crane has been open to them. What would Crane ask Bagwell to do? You saw, obviously, as I said just a second ago, he sent Bill Furkus and Bagwell down to Miami to meet with Abreu at his home to close that deal. Is it just that? I really wonder what else Crane would be asking Bagwell to do. Maybe it's for some confirmation with some of the moves that he's maybe thinking about making now that Crane seems to have a much more active role in actually building this team. Bagwell, who I really do think that Crane showed him off at yesterday's press conference, described how he's feeling in this new active role that he has as part of the Astros brain trust.
I mean, it's great. You know, I enjoy it. You know, it keeps my mind going. I mean, there's not a lot of things I know in life, but one of them is baseball. So if I can give what I know about what it's like to play on the field, to be in certain situations, as well as being in a clubhouse, and even in life, you know, I made enough mistakes in life so I can help there too. But I love being a part of this. I love the Astros, and I just want to see us win.
You hear that one, and that's where I don't have an issue with him being involved. It's those other things. I think that's how everyone should feel about a guy who's one of the best players in this franchise's history being back in the organization. It is cool, but I only want him involved in those kind of capacities, at least right now. I guess I could change my mind over the years, but that's where I'm at right now.
I think it is the fact that they don't have a GM that makes Jeff Bagwell's role, or at least it seems like Jeff Bagwell has like soaked up some of those responsibilities that when they do hire a GM, you hope, all right, thanks, Jeff, for the steady hand through the 2022 offseason. Now, let's go back to having a real GM make decisions.
But, you know, once you've opened the door.
He said he doesn't want to be GM.
Or did he say he didn't want to interview for being the GM? See, there's multiple ways you could look at that. Dark Side J on the Twitch was like, he said he didn't want to interview. I mean, would you? I'm Jeff Bleeping Bagwell.
That's my interview.
Hey, Furkus, you're going to do my job for me, okay? Just Bagwell and Jim Crane badgering poor Bill Furkus. I don't know why we turned Bill Furkus into this nerd who's got glasses on and pimples and...
I think it's because we don't know
the abacus.
We don't know a name of like another person involved with the Astros, like the other assistant GMs.
Well, we don't even know who's officially who's like the lead assistant GM. Like who's the assistant GM? Who's assistant to the GM? And who's the assistant GM?
The assistant to the assistant GM.
Yeah, there's probably a power structure there. There are a couple other guys too. Their names are eluding me right now. Because it's hard to think about anybody else when Bagwell is the one that is being interviewed. It wasn't like they brought Bill Furkus up. It wasn't like they brought any of these other guys up. They brought out Jeff Bagwell yesterday. One more time. This is Jim Crane essentially flexing on everybody who's doubting him for having Jeff Bagwell in his corner. I suppose Reggie Jackson was maybe a little bit more of a dubious idea to roll him out. I didn't mean to say roll him out from that perspective. I'm just saying Reggie Jackson maybe is not the one that you want to be weighing in on transactions like this, especially if he wasn't necessarily involved. But he's supposedly involved in this operation. This is the quote that got everybody mad, at least those in the baseball industry. And there's a lot of people in the baseball industry that are pissed at the Astros because they think it's a toxic work environment and that the way that James Click was treated by Jim Crane was bad. Bagwell was asked if the Astros got too analytically driven under James Click.
Personally, for me, yes. I just think that there are certain things that go on that the numbers can't explain. Because this game is played by humans, man. It's not played by computers. And there's a lot of things that go on. You know, stuff that's not in between, in those doors over there or on the field. There's stuff that goes on at home. A lot of things that can happen throughout a year that mean something. And, you know, it affects players in certain ways. And being able to know that and being able to, that's what Dusty does so great, is he knows his players so well on and off the field, which makes it a lot easier for him to manage because he has the communication with the guys and understands.
He's not wrong, right? He's not wrong there. There are lots of other things that go into baseball other than the information that a general manager might be presenting to a manager and saying, hey, this is why your lineup is going to be X, Y, or Z on a given night. But did you not hear Bagwell kind of submarine his value at the very end? That's what Dusty Baker's so great at. Baker does have pretty damn good feel for what works and what doesn't work. And he had not winning a World Series held against him for such a long time. He finally has it won. And now there aren't going to be a lot of people challenging him, especially after the way that he managed the bullpen in particular this postseason. Still questions about Ryan Stanek, but I mean, I thought they did a damn good job on that front. The lineup maybe is the one that you have questions about. But Jeff Bagwell is going to be a big part of this Astros organization going forward, and Jim Crane just rubbed it in your face with that press conference yesterday. I'm Paul Gallant. This is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. You can call in at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Up next, in our 10-minute drills, we go around the NFL. This is the most Aaron Rodgers story you're ever going to hear, and that is saying something.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. Is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Jim Crane was showing off his trusted advisor, Jeff Bagwell, with that little side press conference that they had after introducing the newest member of the Houston Astros, Jose Abreu. And by the way, they are supposedly very in on Wilson Contreras in a role that would have him, I guess, playing left field from time to time, designated hitter from time to time. So I guess Corey Lee, Yennier Diaz, and Martin Maldonado would still be perhaps the leading candidates to be your catchers next year, with Maldonado probably starting off the year. And I imagine one of those two prospects, whether it's Diaz or Lee, I think Diaz has the leg up given that he was taken, you know, put on the active roster at the end of the year and in the playoffs. I feel like Diaz actually might have a chance of being he's the front runner, I think, right now, as far as that. But anyway, back to the Jeff Bagwell conversation. A lot of vitriol in response to the idea of him being around. I think healthy skepticism is fair. Some of you guys are going a little bit further than that. Poor Marine says, if his hitting performance rubs off on this team for playoff baseball, the Astros are bleeped. Okay, that's more of a joke. Limnologist 05, when Crane unloads his wallet on the 3 to 4 top free agent signings like Contreras, Yuli, Brantley, and maybe Nemo, everyone's going to laugh. BS Flea, this is all on twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. Is this kind of like Magic Johnson constantly tinkering with the Lakers front office decisions for the last 15 years? Some good decisions, some not so good. Well, Magic had a much more prominent role. He was like the vice president of the team.
He was like the actual, yeah, vice president. I think Palinka was the GM.
Right. So this is different.
Also, Magic Johnson's great decision was get LeBron James. Everything else was bad.
Not a bad decision, but you're right. Pretty much everything that Magic Johnson has touched from a basketball perspective has been a bleeping disaster.
Since he retired.
Yeah, that's true. He was good when he played in the NBA.
Yeah, not everything.
Fair point. Okay. A couple other comments. This is on the text line, 713-780-3776, and this is too far. Bagwell's the Astros' Easterbeat. Calm down.
I did want to call him the hand to the king, because that's what it feels like his role is. He's like kind of just, you know, he gives advice, but his advice like weighs very heavily.
But he's like a jock hand to the king. He's not squirrely like Grima Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings with Theoden, or like Littlefinger in the Game of Thrones franchise, or
he's Otto Hightower.
Otto Hightower. No, because Otto Hightower, Otto Hightower is a little less of a worm and a little more of like a straight-faced individual, but he's still a little manipulative. No, this is closer to Ned Stark, I think, as Hand of the King.
I hope it ends better for Bagwell.
Ned wasn't bad. He started to get into the whole honor game, but I mean, Ned was a skilled swordsman, and Ned, on top of that, you know, was someone who had quite the pedigree, quite the pelts on the wall. He helped lead Robert's Rebellion. I know we're doing a really long Game of Thrones tangent, but it's more like, I think, Ned Stark there. Another text. Isn't it easy to ditch leaning heavy analytics when the shift is going away? I suppose to an extent, but there's still other things, I think, at play on this front. 713-780-3776, 713-780 ESPN is how you call in. It's also how you text in. Let's shift into our 10-minute drill. We'll leave the Bagwell conversation on the table. Are you a little bit skeptical of his role in the organization? We've been asking that question the last couple of days. Jim Crane is telling you right now that he is super involved. Let's hit the 10-minute drill.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. So, I told you that this is the most Aaron Rodgers story you're ever going to see. Anyone remember DeShone Kizer? Notre Dame quarterback?
He said he had the mind of Tom Brady and the athleticism of Cam Newton. All-time quote.
Well, he was off on that. So I suppose when you say things like that, maybe things that you say have to be taken with a grain of salt. And everyone everywhere is looking for Aaron Rodgers content wherever they can find it, because he has become a bit of a pariah, I think, in NFL circles due to his play this season, but more so due to his takes on vaccines, his appearances on Joe Rogan. I feel like he's been annoying just because of the fact that he was bitching and moaning about being a part of a Packers team that was really good for a two-year, three-year stretch. It's like, well, they don't care about the people here. Anyway, here is former Packers quarterback DeShone Kizer on his first ever interaction with Aaron Rodgers.
You know, I'm trying to be real studious. You know how it is, first day. You got 12 highlighters for no reason. You got three different types of pens, like a setup, get my station right, walk in. Aaron looks right at me and says, all right, pick the wrong seat. Pick all my stuff up, move it over. Things are great. Cool. I'm going to get set up here. Shut the door. And the first thing that comes out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth was, do you believe in 9/11? What? Do I believe in 9/11? Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't I? He was like, you should read up on that. Okay.
Okay, indeed. I suppose we have to take this with a grain of salt, given Kizer's previous comparisons that Sean just laid out for us. Maybe this didn't actually happen. But is this not the most believable thing that would come out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth? And I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of whether or not, like, you believe in that conspiracy theory, because that's what it is. It's a conspiracy theory. It drives me crazy whenever I hear people like Pete Carroll or Aaron Rodgers talking about this. It really does.
Have you read up on it?
Why should I?
Tower 7, just saying. Building 7. I don't.
Sean, on a personal level, that was like one of the longer days of my life, because I did not know where one of my uncles was for a long time that day, because he worked in the Pentagon. The Pentagon got hit. He happened to be in the courtyard when it happened. I had actually visited the Pentagon a month before and seen the exact office that, like, in the part of the Pentagon that actually got hit. And I have another uncle who works in D.C. who worked at a building that overlooked the Pentagon, and his secretary saw the plane hit it. And it drives me crazy when people ask questions about, one, like, hey, what happened at the Pentagon? I feel like my uncle trusting his secretary is a pretty good person to go to on that one. And the conspiracy theories on this, I'm sorry, this would be way too much and elaborate of a conspiracy to keep completely under wraps. Is there perhaps, I'm going further and further down the rabbit hole I said I'm not going to go down. I just hate it when people go all conspiracy theorist on this specific incident. Anyway, I hope that didn't actually happen, because that is DeShone Kizer's word. But is it surprising when it comes to Aaron Rodgers? If this were the case, would it be surprising? The answer is no.
Yeah, and DeShone Kizer, he's not believable when he's, like, scouting himself.
No.
He's not a liar.
I think a little skepticism is warranted when it comes to, this Kizer story. A little bit, but again,
Not that much.
It's pretty believable.
Instead of DeShone Kizer telling the story, if it was just something that Aaron Rodgers said, like, in two sentences on McAfee, would we be like, oh my God, Aaron Rodgers, I can't believe this?
I wonder if he'll get asked about that the next time he's on Pat McAfee.
No.
Probably not. But it should be.
Hey, how's the thumb, buddy?
Hey, how's the thumb? Hey, how about jet fuel, huh? Like, I mean, yikes. I don't know how Pat would do it. I do think Pat is capable of doing it, so I guess time will tell. Anyone see what took place on Sunday in the Broncos' latest defeat? This time, they lost to the Panthers. Good God. There was a viral moment involving Russell Wilson. Happy 34th birthday, Russell. He turned 34 today. With defensive lineman Mike Purcell yelling in his face. Here is what Purcell had to say about the incident right after the game.
Frustration. We want to spark on something. We all are in this together, period. So, you know, that's the quarterback of our offense. They're about to take the field. Obviously, we let up a touchdown, so we weren't doing our job, but got to get a spark somewhere. So they're about to take the field, so that's all it was. No, I just got the penalty on field goal block. Frustrated at it for everything. You know, we didn't do our job on defense. You know, hats off to them. They ran the ball, and it was just not good enough.
Okay. He's downplaying it, right? Well, what did Russell Wilson have to say about the entire incident? Here's Russell Wilson asked about it after the game as well.
They're battling every play. You know, on offense, we got to be able to capitalize. And so, there's nothing there at all. I mean, me and him, there was nothing there.
And then you had Nathaniel Hackett, the head coach, being asked about it yesterday. And as predictable as ever, Nathaniel Hackett was, I guess, unaware of it in the moment, and he tried to explain it away himself.
Yeah, when we were up there, obviously was addressing Mike on the personal foul that he had, talking with him as he passed by me, heard him say, you know, let's go, and did not know that it was directed to any specific person. Looked like it was just he wanted everybody to start going and wanted to get a spark. So that was really all that I heard. I talked with Mike after, talked with Russell, everybody. Everybody's good. Part of it, it's an emotional game.
So you hear all those things, okay, water under the bridge, right, even though the Broncos are one of the worst teams in the NFL, and if they had a first-round pick next year, it would be very, very early. It would be close to being first overall if they didn't trade that pick away to the Seattle Seahawks. But this came from Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network. While Nathaniel Hackett has not lost the Broncos' locker room, Russ has lost some people around that team. He has lost some people in that locker room, and you can't tell me that Mike Purcell was not just pissed off about the lack of offense that Russell Wilson has provided since joining this team. He was supposed to be the difference, and he has been just like every single other Broncos quarterback that was on this team. And you can also see why a tweet like this, which was done sarcastically by Zachary Kruger at ZK_FFB, he has a blue check mark. He retweeted a Nathaniel Hackett quote. Hackett, I told Russ he's got to stop saying things like, it's Russell Wilson time, when his team is losing 17-3 to the Panthers. It upsets guys, and he gets that now. That's obviously mocking, sarcastic,
but he has a blue check.
Parody tweet. He does, Sean, but
I don't understand. He has a blue check.
Things have changed a little bit on Twitter,
huh?
But let's just look at that quote for a second. It's fake. It's done for laughs. That said, just like the Aaron Rodgers story, is this not very believable coming out of Russell Wilson's mouth? Russell Wilson say, it's Russell Wilson time, or let's ride.
I feel like Russell Wilson, I would believe it more if he was like, time to get dangerous, or something like that.
Good God. Yeah, I'd punch him for that one. He should be punched if he ever does that. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, are you guys bracing for Deshaun Watson's return to the field on Sunday? Is there anything coursing through your veins as we get closer and closer to that guy's return? How are you feeling? I want to know, because I know you were tired of it this offseason. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
There's not a whole lot of video on him, is there? We have a whole lot of it, though.
No, I mean, he hadn't played in a long period of time, but he's a heck of a football player. I know that. And I assume playing quarterback is a lot like riding a bike. Comes back to you fairly quick. I know he's been practicing with them. They've been playing good football. Ed and Deshaun, of course, will make them that much better.
Poor Lovie Smith. Does feel like he is just getting closer and closer to the end of his time as the head coach of the Houston Texans. And now he's got to field Deshaun Watson questions this week. I am curious as to what Deshaun Watson's first press conference with the Cleveland Browns is going to be like. The idea that he will show any remorse whatsoever is, I would say, unlikely, especially given the way that the last one went, but it was a long time ago. The last time that we saw him speak to us. I stand on my innocence. I stand on my innocence. Here's what we do know about Sunday's game between the Texans and Browns from the, hey, Deshaun Watson's back in town perspective. 10 of the Watson accusers plan to attend Sunday's Browns-Texans game in a suite together. Per Tony Busby, the goal is to, quote, to kind of make the statement, hey, we're still here, we matter, our voice was heard, and this is not something that's over. Sexual harassment and assault happens every day in the United States, end quote. I heard the bench joking about this. Well, you're trying to get these people away from trauma and you're bringing them to a Texans game. I laughed. If this does bring them some sort of inner peace, great. I wonder if it will, though. I think if you're going to go to a competitive sporting event and you're going to see the guy that has done these horrible things to you, and he's playing against a bad football team that represents your city, your hometown, your whatever, and he just absolutely crushes them, are you going to feel better? And I hope they do. I'm trying to put myself in their shoes. I really do hope that they are able to go and that this does bring them some sort of closure. But I feel like going back to this, and just realizing that, yeah, the NFL does not care about what happened. They didn't even suspend him a full year. They realized that in a game that could feature two bad teams, one without their starting quarterback for most of the year, the other a rebuilding team, that if they put this guy in this game, that there will be interest as far as some people going to the game and some people watching it. I would feel more, I think, jaded than anything. And going to the game, I think, would make it a little bit worse. Again, I'm not speaking for them. That's, I think, how I would feel in their shoes. But if they're going to go, I hope it does bring them some sort of closure or whatever. As far as it goes for us, I mean, Watson coming back to town is like your relative who ruined Thanksgiving last week. You knew he was coming. You knew he was going to do it. Whether it was his hot right-wing or left-wing takes or the fact that he's a drunk or the fact that he always brings drama around. You knew what was coming. And he did it anyway. And you invited him anyway. Like that's where I'm at. I was excited about this game going into the year. This was the Texans Super Bowl going into the year. It still is the Texans Super Bowl, even though there are probably less faces in that locker room that remember Deshaun Watson now than, honestly, because he didn't play the last time he was here. And, of course, he has been, it's been 2 years, essentially, since we saw this guy on the field at all, on the field for the Texans, too. I don't think there's a lot of, like, desire for vengeance here, you know? This is one of those games where I feel like if you're a fan, you have an attachment and a desire to see this team win. But if you're one of these players, I don't think you give a damn.
Yeah, when the suspension was initially announced and the revised suspension, remember that when they like tried to just suspend him for six games, like that was crazy. And then when we found out this first game would be against the Texans, I remember I was especially like, if anyone in that locker room has any like sense of pride, like this is your Super Bowl because you definitely won't be playing in the real Super Bowl anytime soon.
That's so for sure.
This is the, and then now like fast forward to like it's actually week 12, and I'm like, eh, who cares? Like,
I was like,
should be your A-plus game. Like, he's, before all the sexual assault stuff, like, He looked around that locker room and says, nah, I demand a trade. I will not play with these guys, not just after the 2020 season. Even in the 2021 season, I just will not play for these guys. And I was like, you need to take that personally. I don't blame them if they don't care again.
I don't either. And I wonder what the motivational tactic could be from a Lovie Smith. Is there even one? I mean, I imagine Lovie's just like, hey, let's have any offense whatsoever. Brandon Cooks was a guy who said, I never want to get traded again because I want to play with Deshaun Watson forever. Is he going to feel like he has something to prove in this game?
But he also hates the Texans now.
Right. This one's going to suck. It really is. Like, the only thing that'll be worth watching for is the boos, but I don't think there's going to be enough people in an NRG Stadium to even make that feel cathartic in any way.
What could be maybe we save this discussion for later, but what is the most attainable measure of success for the Texans that you can be like, yeah, like first drive for the Browns, 3-and-out? Was that like, well, basically like winning a game?
It's messed up, but it's injuring Watson.
Oh, you don't root for injury, Paul.
I'm saying that would be, for the people watching, and especially for those 10 victims, that alleged victims that are going to be there, and very likely victims. I hate to throw the alleged word out. The problem is, since it didn't go through
the
criminal court,
it makes it a little bit more likely.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like that's really it. I mean, and that's a pretty barbaric thought to have enter your mind, but I mean, that's legitimately the only dub that happens out there.
Halftime lead.
No, because if you blow it, I mean,
no touchdowns for Deshaun Watson. It's all Chubb and Hunt.
If Watson has a Russell Wilson kind of game, that's your win. That really, like, that's it. And what are the odds that's going to happen? Like, this team stinks. And honestly, I mean, they just need to hand the ball off to Nick Chubb. They'll probably run for 200 yards. Hand it to him 20 times. 200 yards guaranteed against this front seven. So it's depressing. I mean, that's where we're at. I think we're all in the same spot. Like, this sucks. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text into. So with that in mind, and sorry to go back-to-back with the Texans on this show ever, but I thought that we should let our feelings out when it comes to a couple of specific figures in this organization. When it comes to the following: Cal McNair, Lovie Smith, Pep Hamilton, Nick Caserio, Davis Mills, and hell, we'll throw Brandon Cooks in there too. One word to describe your emotion when it comes to all six of those guys. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.